Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. Our guest this episode, we have Todd Hackle of Tamarack Island Wilderness Lodge on Ontario's Lake of the Woods. This is Todd's first time on, so it's just fun to get to know him. I've actually had the privilege of experiencing an ice fishing trip up there on Tamarack Island about a year ago. We filmed the Jason Mitchell Outdoors television show where we caught big crappies on Lake of the Woods, and we were staying at Tamarack Island. You can find that episode on YouTube, but a very, very fun experience. So it's great to get back in touch with Todd and kind of get to know him a little bit and highlight the fishing opportunities there, because it is a little bit unique that there's really nobody else. There's no other lodges. There's really no other infrastructure on that part of Lake of the Woods. And so, it's a year-round fishing lodge, but specifically in the wintertime, it's a really, really cool opportunity, especially for Midwest anglers that are a little bit adventurous and looking for that Canadian fishing experience, but maybe don't want the commitment of, a really long, like 18-hour drive where you got to get way far north to get away from people. This is actually, this is a really, really cool fishing opportunity to highlight, and Todd's a great guy to get to know, so really fun episode here. Again, Todd Hackle, Tamarack Island Wilderness Lodge. Let's get to it. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Preparing for the upcoming ice fishing season means making great gear choices that will help you maximize your time on the water. That's where Summit Fishing Equipment comes in. The trusted choice for anglers who demand reliable, affordable, and top-quality forward-facing sonar gear and accessories for all the major brands, including Garmin LiveScope, Lowrance Active Target, and Hummingbird Mega Live. Check out their bestseller, the Summit HD CNC Shuttle. It's designed to protect your expensive electronics from harsh winter conditions while keeping everything portable for easy transport. You could pair that up with the lightweight yet robust carbon fiber ice transducer pole and the versatile Summit bag to complete the setup. Crafted from advanced carbon fiber, this forward sonar pole is not only incredibly strong, but also the lightest on the market. Their offerings don't stop at just poles and shuttles. Summit Fishing Equipment offers a full range of bags, mounts, and accessories to customize your fishing rig to your exact specifications. So whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started, Summit has what you need to improve your experience on the ice. Explore Summit's collection at summitfishingequipment.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Summit Fishing Equipment is also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. To start this off a little bit with, who you are, where you're from, and, just where you're, where this sort of journey in fishing and being a lodge owner, and where does this all begin, man? Where are you from? Where'd you get your start?
I grew up in a small town outside of Winnipeg, Manitoba, called Lorette. It's kind of a bedroom community to Manitoba. And I was always really outdoorsy. But my parents were not. So always like dreamed of fishing and hunting and trapping but never really had the opportunity, even though I grew up in kind of a rural town. It was all farm fields and that kind of thing. So there wasn't a whole lot of opportunity. So I never really started hardcore till I got my driver's license, I guess. So I had a couple of family friends that would take me on a canoe trip and we fished then. Or taking me ice fishing during hockey season. So hockey was, of course, my life growing up too. So there wasn't a whole lot of time for ice fishing then. But grew up in a small town outside of Winnipeg and always dreamed of being able to hunt and fish, but never really had too much opportunity to do that. So fast forward. I always wanted to, have a career outside. So, but didn't really know how to pursue that, I guess. Right. So, spent a week every year at my grandparents on their farm in Western Manitoba and loved that. But then started working when I was 15. So summer jobs. So that took me away from that a little bit. And, and it wasn't really till later in life that things kind of lined up. So I went to college and took forestry and fish and wildlife. I went to college in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. So that's kind of where things really started kicking off for me in the outdoors. I couldn't see myself in an office, and ironically, I do a lot of office work today, but wanted to have a career outdoors and maybe thought about maybe being a conservation officer, that kind of thing, or something in the outdoors. So went to Sault Ste. Marie for 3 years, took forestry and fish and wildlife there. And then during the summertime, the forest industry was really down in Canada at the time. There wasn't many summer jobs, but they had a co-op program. So I asked if I could work at a fishing resort, and they said, absolutely. So I sent out 300 resumes to lodges all across Northwestern Ontario, Northern Manitoba, Northern Saskatchewan, the territories, BC. And they taught you how to write a resume and do a cover letter, and they paid for all the postage and everything. So as it turns out, I got a job on Lake of the Woods. And the reason I picked that, I had about 7 or 8 offers out of all those resumes. So anyway, I picked this because I had a girlfriend in Winnipeg, and they let me have some time off in the summertime, which was important to me. So there you go. So I started my career on Lake of the Woods, being a dock hand at a resort not too far from the one that we own today. So did that for 2 summers. Then I started my career and started doing seasonal forestry work, and that wasn't really going anywhere. So after, 7 or 8 years of doing seasonal work, and then I married my girlfriend, that I needed the time off in the summer for. So we started having kids, and it was time to get a real job and not just something seasonally. So I worked in a hog farm for 5 years. I really enjoyed that, as crude as it could be, but I really enjoyed it. And then I became a feed salesman with a really good company here out of Winnipeg. And then I was a territory manager with them. And that's kind of where I learned the business sense. So I sold feed to hog farmers in Manitoba. So we kept in good contact with my old employer at the lodge. And in the meantime, he had bought a second lodge and was running that. And to make a long story short, we ended up buying that one off of them, kind of when they were, at the end of their kind of career cycle, I guess. So that's how we bought Tamarack. And it was really, it was a tough market for my old employers. It was kind of a perfect storm for resorts through the 9/11 had happened, and Americans had stopped traveling. There was the banking crisis in 2008, and the housing crisis, and it just, people weren't traveling like they used to. And now you needed a passport to come to Canada. So there was more barricades all the time. So the camp that we bought was fairly run down when we got it. But today, it's 14 years later, it's pretty thriving. So I don't know if that's a pretty quick rundown of how I became a lodge.
No, there's all kinds of fun things I think to hear about in there. Like I just love the personal stories, and I think about, you talk about not necessarily growing up in a super outdoorsy family, but it's ultimately all around you when you're living in, growing up in the outskirts of Winnipeg and all that. It's like the outdoors are in proximity to you. So I can understand that, it was visible to you, but I'm sort of curious to dig into that a little bit deeper of like, you know, did you have legit mentors, people that just sort of inspired you? Were you just like consuming content, you know, reading magazines, television? I'm curious about how that passion was sitting there, like percolating through those younger years of your life, even though you didn't have like direct in the house, you know, type family members that were giving it to you. I'm just so curious about how does that passion stay alive in you for that long?
Right. So yeah, so growing up in Lorette, I mean, the outdoors was right there, but kind of inaccessible. I mean, you know, like the Whiteshell Provincial Park was a great fishery when I was a kid, you know, but it was an hour and a half drive. And then my parents, you know, they would rent a cabin on a lake every summer. So that kind of, you know, that I got a taste for it then. So they sure did that. And we, you know, I know we spent some time in Gimli, you know, a couple of times. We spent some time in the Whiteshell a couple of times. And so I remember that. And we would pack up everything, including the household cat. And we'd rent a cabin for a week on a lake. And they'd buy me a fishing rod. And I wouldn't know what I was doing. And they would say they're biting on spinners, you know. So I'd buy like a walleye spinner and try to be casting that thing. So, I really had no idea what I was doing. You know, I was 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, you know, doing that kind of stuff and would catch the odd fish or whatever. So that, and then I couldn't get enough, like, you know, at the school library, we had a magazine called Outdoor Canada here, and I couldn't get enough. And our librarian at our school, she was an awesome lady, and she would, her husband would get this subscription and I would like take all the magazines and read them from cover to cover and just whet my appetite that way. And watching all the fishing shows, of course, I was a big Bob Azumi fan, which is he's a big fisherman up here in Canada from Southern Ontario. And he had a show called Real Fishing and there was other shows too, but I really remember that one. He was kind of my idol for a while, and Gord Pizer. And then I would go to the boat show in Winnipeg every year and go to the seminars and then when, you know, it was cool when I was selling feed for Landmark Feeds, I would take my customers who enjoyed fishing, I'd take them out fishing and sometimes we'd go on my boat or sometimes we'd get a guide. So I often got Jeff Gustafson out of Kenora and we'd spend the day with him and that was awesome. So, and other guides too, to fish with Gussie before he was really, really huge was pretty cool. It's kind of a small world and it's kind of all taken off. And it's funny how life leads you down certain paths, you know. But
As an angling community, you know, young people, it's easy to sometimes lose them they lose interest if they don't get some level of exposure right away. And so, like, you know, just hearing how you sort of powered through all the other distractions in life, you know, even through college and getting married and having huge responsibilities in life, like, you know, that passion was just sort of, it was always there. It was always like a part of you and you were able to act on it. Never got distracted by everything else.
We'd prioritize that. Like, we would always try to do camping trips every chance we'd get. You know, we didn't have a lot of money. But we'd camp and we'd always camp close to a lake and we'd fish and, you know, later on I bought a small boat and that was our boat and we'd go in a family, you know, bring the kids when they're little and whether it was canoeing or in a boat, there'd always be fishing involved. So it's kind of taken off from there. So sorry to cut you off. I just thought I would.
No, that's, I just love it. I think that it's worth, you know, digging into that sort of element of your story. It's kind of inspiring too, like in its own way, just for anybody. And a lot of us are spoiled, you know, I was spoiled, you know, I did grow up in an outdoorsy family. I wouldn't know necessarily what that's like, but I know even if your parents are outdoorsy, your family, you've got siblings and everybody's like, you know, everybody's doing it. It, like you say, it's a lifestyle, it's a priority in your life. Even then, you know, the distractions of everything in life, you know, can like, you know, steer you away but somebody like yourself that powered through that. And you can't own a lodge for 14 years without, you know, doing a few things right at the very least.
Yeah,
I think that, you know, there's, and you know all what? That stuff is worth pointing out.
owning a lodge was a pipe dream. Like, it was a pipe dream. I never thought it would happen. And it is kind of a funny story. It all came together. So there was a perfect storm in our lives. So I was selling feed for Landmark Feeds in Manitoba, a great company. I loved it. I had great bosses and great people that I worked with. But my world was changing fast. I was selling feed to hog farmers. And my hog farmers were not making any money. So I did that first. I sold feed for 6 years. And a lot of my farmers maybe made money for maybe 14 or 16 months out of those whole 6 years or 5 years or whatever it was. So a lot of them were getting out of the industry. So my clientele was shrinking and nobody was getting into farming, obviously. So my world was changing fast. I'd rotated through a few bosses in a quick succession. So it's like, well, you're not selling anything. It's like, well, no kidding. You know, what am I supposed to do? So I know there was talk about maybe going to Alberta or maybe doing it as different segments. So my world was changing and I wasn't sure what was going. And my wife really didn't enjoy her job at the time. And we had three young kids. You know, they were like, I'm going to say like 11, 8 and 7. So, and then she was, you know, we were busy with the kids and Kim especially. And she did, you know, so she, her job, her world was changing too. So we were actually up at the lodge, a working vacation. So we would go up, often, you know, once a summer, twice a summer, and we would help out. We would stay for pretty much next to nothing, but we would do chores and we would help. And then Jerry called me, my old boss, called me the week before we were coming. He's like, hey, my guy at my other camp just quit. And I was wondering if you and Kim could go there and run it for us. And it would really, you don't have to, but he said, it would really help us out a lot. And I said, absolutely. We'd love to do that. It'd be the least we could do for all the stuff you've done for us over the years. So, and everybody, and then we just kind of, so my wife worked at that camp too. My second summer, she came and worked there too. So she had worked at a camp too. So we kind of knew what we were doing a little bit. Anyway, so people would get there and the cabins would be cleaned and cleaner than they had been in the past. And the plumbing leaks would be fixed and we'd be attentive to them. And they weren't quite used to that. So it was kind of a running down camp, but the fishing was so good that we inherited a whole bunch of musky fishermen that didn't really care as long as they could have a shower and plug in their boats and that kind of thing. But everybody that week said that we should buy this place. Everybody. It was crazy. Like, you guys are doing such a great job. You guys should buy this place. And it just kind of resonated with me. I was like, wow, can we do this? You know, so Kim had taken the summer off work that year and got reduced pay like a teacher does. So she worked 10 months and got, you know, got paid throughout the year, but her got paid less or whatever. So that summer she was able to do that. So I went back to work after my week off and she stayed at the camp with the kids and kind of kept running it. And then I went to work and then came back and we spent another weekend and then we went back home. And I mean, that whole time I rolled up a business plan and I just couldn't get it in my head because I knew my world was changing and Kim was all over it at the time. So long story short, that's kind of what brainwashed us a little bit into buying the place, but yeah. And then buying it was a total kerfuffle too, just trying to deal with banks and you know, that kind of thing. So, but anyway, we finally made it happen through some friends and stuff helping us out, but yeah, no, it was good.
You talk about, you know, being in a totally different line of work, you know, like selling feed work, you know, with the hog industry, you know, that obviously, I mean, you said it out loud, but I mean, that obviously had an impact on you in terms of just your business sense and just your confidence, probably in certain areas of being, you know, running your own business. I'm curious about that. Like, are there anything specifically, you know, as far as how you operate your business that you could put your finger on as far as, you know, lessons and perspective that you learned from a totally different industry that you sort of bring into this?
Sure. All kinds. First of all, I mean, the way I look at it is you're in business because you're providing a service somebody wants. You're not in it to rip anybody off or buy low, sell high. Like, that's the way I see it. I see it that, you're an honorable business that you have something to sell that people want, and you want to provide a service for them, and you want to do the best you can at it. So things like just thanking people for their business, like, thank you so much for your business. We know there's other options out there, and we're just so glad that you chose us. Things like that. I remember we had a issue with feed quality one time where we just had some newer staff, and I think that the prices of grains had changed, so the formula of the feed had changed a little bit, and they couldn't get the pellet quality quite there. And I remember one of my colleagues saying, hey, I've been working on this client for like, you know, a year, and he's finally going to jump and try our creep feed. And I don't even want to sell it to him because the quality's not there right now, you know. And then my boss just said, hey, your job is to sell, and we need to report these problems, and we need to fix them. So you sell, we fix. So they were able to fix that issue real quickly. And then my colleague was able to pick up that customer. So that kind of, you know, early on, especially, people would ask me, well, can you do that? And I was like, yeah, I can do that. My wife would be like, are you sure we can do that? I was like, yes, if we, you know, we know what's coming, we can plan for it, we can have the staff in place, and we can make that happen. And if we just can't, then I'll just say, no, we can't do that. But, you know, like certain things, like, you know, for, you know, we serve a meal plan at our camp. And I'm really the only camp that I know that does this. And this is summertime I'm talking about. The wintertime, we don't do meals yet, but in the summertime, we do meals. So customers are like, well, we, you know, the fish, if the movement is good or the bite is on, we don't want to come back for supper. So I said, well, we can make your supper kind of flexible. So right now we do suppers anywhere between 4:30 and 8 o'clock. You just let us know in the morning what time you want to do dinner, and we make it happen. Most camps is like, hey, it's 6 o'clock or it's 5:30. And if you're not there, you don't eat. So we're really flexible with breakfast times and supper times. And something different that we do that I learned kind of from that industry, you know, from just being people focused and customer focused, and that kind of thing. I'm just bringing things from one business to another business, and not everything applies, but a lot of the things apply. And then just building relationships. You know, it's not just a one and done thing with us. I mean, we want you back in. We want you to catch fish. We want you to have a great time because we want you to come back again. So just having that relationship and trying to spend time with the customers. And it's getting harder now because we're so busy, but you still want to take that time and spend with the customers. I still do a lot of trade shows, and I don't probably need to, but I do think it's valuable because I'll see a whole bunch of customers there. So like this coming week, I'm doing the Muskie show in Minneapolis, and I might pick up two or three groups from it, but I'll see 80 or 90 customers at that show. And that's kind of why I do it. And I think that's one thing that I learned from that job too, just building relationships and just having your customer is your friend, your customer is also your friend.
Yeah.
So, things like that. So yeah.
Yeah. It's like the challenges, like hardships or tough times, and how to navigate through that is that great perspective. It's like, if you talk about how in your 5 or 6 years of working, selling in the hog business, like, you know, your customers, you know, probably made money for less than 2 years of it. Like, if you'd been in the hog business or been involved in that, and it had been really, really excellent the whole time, and that job would have been really, really easy, you probably would have learned a lot less good lessons.
Well, sure. And you know what? I may have just stayed there. I mean, we might not have bought the lodge. You know what I mean? If I didn't have that uncertainty coming, it was my dream job. I mean, yeah, I worked hard. I worked long hours, but a lot of it was fun. A lot of it, like I said, was taking customers fishing or going out for dinner, or going to a producer meeting, or walking through the producer's barn and trying to solve a problem for them. And it was long work, and it was hard work, but it was fun work too at the same time. So it was a real fun job for me. So I wasn't really looking for a change, but it just kind of jumped on your lap and opportunity was there. I didn't see a future in that industry for me, was the big thing. But yeah, you're right. Like, you know, just navigating through tough times and even, you know, owning the lodge, our first, you know, we knew we had a great location. We knew the fishing was phenomenal. We're kind of in a really remote part of Lake of the Woods, and it's quiet. I knew the fishing was so good. It was really some of the best places in the world to catch muskies. right out our front door, you know. But you know, you're trying to build it and you're trying to sell it, and it's a different kind of, you know, when you're at a trade show, you're talking to somebody for maybe 5 minutes. You know, you don't get to build a relationship with them. They, you know, I didn't have great pictures in the beginning. So I really learned how to market too. And it took me a few years, but we're still not amazing at it, but you just learn little things. And man, you know, you're like, you could feel it taking off. You could feel people like wanting to come, but they hadn't booked yet. And some people would book, but it was like, man, are we going to last long enough for this to actually take off? And we kind of, you know, the first 3 years you lost your shirt. The next three, you kind of broke even, you know, for 6 years, you really didn't make any money, you know, not a whole bunch, you know? So luckily year 7 and 8 were great years for us. And then of course you just start doing really, really well. And COVID happens. And it's like, oh my God, what's now?
Yeah.
You know, and then that's, you know, I mean, we can kind of talk about our ice fishing business now. So that's kind of how we transitioned to ice fishing. During COVID, our government did its best to help us, I think. Some people think they could have done more. I think they certainly could have done less. But at the same time, we'll take what we can get. So they paid 90% of our employees' wages. So we were able to keep our employees on, which was great. And we just did a lot of things that we just didn't have time to do, you know, little painting and fixing this and fixing that and screens and all that kind of stuff. But there was a government grant that was for a new revenue stream. So we'd always wanted to maybe do ice fishing and branch out to that. So that kind of enabled us to get going on ice fishing. So now this is our fourth year ice fishing, and it's really kind of taken off. We're the only ones in our region, in our town, that kind of do it, out of Morrison, Ontario. And we're not far from Baudette, which is a mecca. And Red Lake, which is an early ice mecca, and War Road, and you know, that whole, and the angle, and all that part of Lake Lewis, they've been doing really well ice fishing for years, and we were just around the corner from that. We offer something totally different, you know, and the fishing is so good. There's no crowds. So many species to catch, and it's been a good transition for us. This is our fourth year, And I know last year we doubled over what we did the year before. This year, I don't think we're quite going to double, but we'll grow again. And it's been fun. It's been really, really good. So we really enjoy it.
Yeah, you're already kind of starting it there, but I want to get into sort of what the offerings are there. But even just sort of the story of the lodge, you know, talking about where it's located and the fishing opportunities there. But again, just like specifically, you know, what the experience is, as far as like where you're located, how you get there. And, you know, I'm looking at the big picture, but yeah, like you say, seasonally, we should probably spend some time talking about this, the ice fishing opportunities that you guys offer for sure. I mean, we're going to lean pretty heavily into that. So yeah, maybe just kind of, you know, kind of continuing on what you're talking about as far as where you're located and what the whole deal is, what the selling points are for Tamarack Island Wilderness.
Sure. So the best thing about us is we're out of Morrison, and the best thing about Morrison is nobody's ever heard of it.
Yeah.
And it's in a great part of the lake. It really is. And we are like 8-10 miles west of Morrison, out on the lake. So where we're at, if you draw a line north to south, we're the only resort in probably about 30 miles, and east to west, the only resort in probably about 24 miles. So in that whole circle, we're the only resort in there. And then the other thing is that, you know, people have heard of Sabascong Bay, you know, Nestor Falls, Sioux Narrows. So those places have been like, it's like, if I think of Nestor Falls to Morrison, it's like the Sabascong Bay, and it's great. It's beautiful. It's awesome. The fishing is great. But it's also been hit really hard since probably the 50s, right? And we're west of that, and kind of, you got to kind of get through big water to get to our place. So that kept a lot of people away. Just the adventurous kind of went that way, kind of before GPS. So now with GPS being, you know, prom- dominant. And you know, I mean, you can go anywhere on that lake, and just our area just hasn't been hit hard. It's a wonderful, wonderful area to fish. So, we're not the only area. Like the whole Morrison area and Miles Bay and Rubber Island and Dawson Island and Big Island and the Little Traverse. I mean, we got good access to all that. And it's, like I said, in the wintertime, we have it all to ourselves. In the summertime, you'll see some boat traffic out there, but it's not crazy high pressure like other parts of Lake Gar. So it's a great, great location. So, and like I said, it's like about 45 minutes north of Baudette, and then another 20 minutes either by snowmobile or by boat to our island. And then you're in God's country. So it's pretty cool.
Preparing for the upcoming ice fishing season means making great gear choices that will help you maximize your time on the water. That's where Summit Fishing Equipment comes in. The trusted choice for anglers who demand reliable, affordable, and top-quality forward-facing sonar gear and accessories for all the major brands, including Garmin LiveScope, Lowrance Active Target, and Hummingbird Mega Live. Check out their bestseller, the Summit HD CNC Shuttle. It's designed to protect your expensive electronics from harsh winter conditions while keeping everything portable for easy transport. You could pair that up with the lightweight yet robust carbon fiber ice transducer pole and the versatile Summit bag to complete the setup. Crafted from advanced carbon fiber, this forward sonar pole is not only incredibly strong, but also the lightest on the market. Their offerings don't stop at just poles and shuttles. Summit Fishing Equipment offers a full range of bags, mounts, and accessories to customize your fishing rig to your exact specifications. So whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started, Summit has what you need to improve your experience on the ice. Explore Summit's collection at summitfishingequipment.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Summit Fishing Equipment is also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Like, I was just doing this before calling you, you know, like, okay, you cross the border. Like, if you're like us, if you're stateside and we're traveling there, you cross the border in Baudette. Like, Baudette is, you know, from like downtown Minneapolis, like maybe a 5 hour, maybe a little over a 5 hour drive. If you're from, you know, anywhere, you know, outside of the city, that's just a reference point. But like, you know, Minnesota, where a lot of people are, a lot of ice anglers right. are, like, that's just like, you know, two cups of coffee to get to the border, and then you're 45 minutes north. It doesn't sound like it's a wildly far away place that would offer nearly the adventure that it does. And I'm speaking from experience because we went up and filmed up there, and that was what was so striking to me, was like, we ended up having just like an adventure that would make you feel like you're in like a fly-in in the Northwest Territories. I can't remember if we were there, was it like January or something like that, but it's like, you know, it's midwinter, man, and it feels like it's super adventurous when you take that drive from the mainland out to your island. I mean, it's, you can't see the mainland like from the cabin door. Like, there, like, you don't, you know, you have that sense of, you know, being in a wild place, because you really truly are. But relatively speaking, it's not, you know, you don't have to take a 22 hour plane ride, or, you know, you don't take a, you know, 18 hour drive to the northern reaches of the province. Like, this is, you know, Lake of the Woods, a big body of water. And I've done a lot of podcasts on it, and filmed a lot of shows, you know, with Jason over the years. And we sample new experiences all the time, but yeah, this was like a particularly fun one. And I feel like, it's going to be hard for us to completely, describe how fun and adventurous it is, but just hopefully there's the essence of what you're describing. I'm just trying to throw my two cents in here because I was there, but it is, for being in such proximity, like you just, 45 minutes north of Baudette. I mean, anybody that's in the Midwest, if they don't already know in their head, I mean, you just bring up your phone and see, border town Baudette, you shoot 45 minutes north to Morrison. And especially in the wintertime, and when most of those lodges are shut down, and I mean, that is it's a legit super adventure. But I don't want to skip over this section. My next question, basically, to keep going, I'm curious about all your offerings. I want to get that out in this podcast because I think, a lot of it kind of creates different topics that we should talk about as far as the opportunities of fishing up there. But, it's a multi-species destination. Absolutely. We should tie into that a little bit. Just everything that you offer, and you've owned it for 14 years. You talk about, getting into the business and doing the renovations. I'm curious about sort of the status update of where you guys are at today on Tamarack Island.
Right. So, every year for us is just a little bit better than the previous year. We're still kind of growing that way. We have probably, in the summertime, I'm going to say we have over a 90% repeat rate. And the wintertime, we're very close to that, I would say. Not that everybody comes every year, but, a lot of people come every second or every third. In the summertime, there's more people that come every year, for sure. Species-wise, and the cool thing about Lake of the Woods, is you've got lots of fish. There's lots of small fish. You'll catch piles of small fish, but you always have a chance of a trophy because it's big water. And there's lots of trophy fish. So we're talking, we got great northern pike fishing, and nobody really even talks about that. But we probably get 300, maybe 350 northerns a year over 38 inches. And a lot of them are caught by our muskie anglers, and they just kind of, they just shake it off. They're just kind of pissed that's not a muskie,
Yeah.
We got an amazing crappie fishery in the wintertime and in the fall time. It's an amazing crappie fishery. And we're talking crappies up to, 15.5, 16 inches, which is a really big crappie for this far north. And their average is a good average. I think our average size is probably 12.5 inches. Perch, you kind of happen onto yellow perch when you're walleye fishing, you're crappie fishing. And our perch probably average, 11.5, 12 inches. And they're beautiful, deep perch. Walleye fishing it's world-class. It really is. It's world-class. It's maybe not on par with Lake Erie and Lake Winnipeg as far as big fish are concerned, but it is an awesome destination for walleye fishing. I mean, in the summertime, it's not really a big deal to catch 100 walleyes in a boat with two or three guys. And if it's really dialed in and you're a really good fisherman, oftentimes you're getting 100 walleyes each. Smallmouth bass, hardly anybody fishes for smallmouth, and it's world-class too. It's an amazing fishery. So a bunch of our local guides, they fish the Kenora Bass International out of Kenora, and they'll come all the way down and fish our water, and they'll burn 45 minutes there and 45 minutes back, or an hour if the weather's a bit rough, but they'll often finish in the top 10 of that KBI. So our smallmouth bass fishing is phenomenal too. Of course, muskies, we've talked about that a little bit. I think last year was a down year for muskies all across our area. And I think it had to do with our winter that we didn't really get last year. But the year before that, we had 35 muskies over 50 inches of our camp. And we probably get 50 a year that are 49 or bigger, 49, but not quite 50, 49, 49 and a half, 49, three quarters, that kind of thing. So, the muskie fishing is tremendous. And then, you got saugers and you got tullabies and that kind of thing as well. So we've had customers that have caught 7 species in a day, 8 species in a day. So it's pretty cool to drop your jig and not know really what you're going to catch. So it's kind of pretty fun that way. But yeah, lots of numbers of fish with trophy potential for all the species. And we're off the beaten path. And I think our trump card is our location. You're coming to Baudette. ice fishing anyway. We're 45 minutes away from that. You're coming to Red Lake ice fishing. We're maybe an hour and a half from there. We're 6-7 hours from the Twin Cities. We're 11 hours from Milwaukee. We're 12 hours from Chicago. We're probably 8-9 hours from Green Bay. You don't have to get to Canada and drive another 8 hours.
Right.
I hear that a lot from people. Oh, you're just across the board. Like, I don't have to drive 8 more hours. And the fishing's probably going to be better than where we're going now. And I think that's why we get so many repeats, is because they realize they don't have to go far. And we treat them well. Like I said, we bend over backwards for our customers. We have 10 staff now in the summertime. We have 4 there in the wintertime right now. And we try to make sure that all the basic needs are met. Whatever you need, we're there to get. So, it's an awesome experience that we offer, I think.
Yeah. You know, your point there is perfect. Like, you know, if we were to describe what the experience can be like, you know, the adventurous, the potential for the big fish, and you just describe the fishing and the lack of fishing pressure, like especially ice fishing, like you talked about, you know, sort of the sphere of like, you're the only place that's open for ice fishing, in that area. There, the amount of structure, the amount of spots to fish, it's as mind boggling as you would describe, you know, any other like super fun remote place. And you know, what we experienced when we went up there was like, you know, just doing map study is fun, right? For anybody, all that garage fishing, when you're getting ready to go on a trip and you're studying the map, yeah. And it's like, well, we're going to be in this area and do this, this, and this. I mean, you're talking about an area on Lake of the Woods where the islands and the, you know, the basins and this and all the different species, like you could go up there and fish for 7 days and every single spot that you hop to, every single area, every hole you drill is on some type of a waypoint or something, you know, that you're trying to locate fish. And it's not unrealistic to think, that for 7 days you could fish all, you could drill a hole over a fresh spot every single hole you drill. It's like, if you were to describe that, and then have a multiple choice question, for somebody like here in the Midwest, you know, if you were to a multiple choice question, how far away or how far across the border do you think that this adventure is? You know, no one would say, well, 45 minutes north of Baudette.
Right.
But
right.
Really, like the amenities, before we get through this, we should talk about just some of the amenities that you guys sort of offer as far as, you know, because, yeah, like, I mean, it's like us, like complete DIY. Just show up. All I need is a place to sleep and maybe cook my own meals, bring my own food right up to, you know, everything that you guys sort of offer right there. We should probably rattle some of that stuff off. I think it's important for people that are maybe on the fence or even getting triggered a little bit about thinking about one of these adventures.
Sure. No, for sure. I was just going to touch that we are an awesome place for like an adventurous fisherman. So If you like just like to beat your own path and do your own thing, our lake is mapped, like it's chipped. You know, the Lake Master is the best map for our lake. You can download the One Boat app on your phone and you can just go, well, today we're gonna fish this point, or this morning we're gonna try this, we're gonna split up, and you know, it's just, and you go to the next one. And we've got people that have been coming for 10 years that still take a day and fish stuff they've never fished before.
Yeah.
You know, so to be able to do that, you know, it's just so cool. But yeah, our amenities, I guess we'll say that we're way different in the summertime than we are in the wintertime. That's kind of by necessity. In the wintertime, we don't have running water, but we kind of can get around that a little bit. So we provide lake water each day for to each cabin for doing dishes and for showering. And you just heat the water up on a stove, and then you can use the shower in the cabin, and you can use the kitchen sink. And then we have heated, lighted outhouses on the island. So, and then we don't offer meals in the wintertime. But the cabins are nicely set up. Like you say, we put a lot of money and a lot of work into our cabins. So they got a good heat source, whether it be a wood burning stove or propane heat, or a couple of the smaller cabins have electric heat. The kitchens are well equipped, so you don't have to bring anything. There's a Weber gas grill outside of every cabin. There's also a double fish cooker outside of every cabin. We have pots and pans for the outdoor cookers. Just ask their staff, we'll get them for you. And then inside the cabin is all the kitchen stuff that you need for inside the cabin as well. So, in the wintertime, you bring your own bedding. We ask you to bring a towel if you're going to shower. And we ask you to bring, like, maybe some slippers or some Crocs or something to wear inside the cabin. In the summertime, it's quite a bit different. Like, we don't have running water, so we can't do piles and piles of laundry. So we do make the bed each time with a mattress protector and a fitted sheet. And then you bring, like, a sleeping bag and a pillow kind of thing. In the summertime, we provide all the linens. I mean, we do meals. We have unlimited free ice, which you don't really need in the wintertime, obviously. We have a main lodge. You know, when there's a fireplace and there's a big screen TV in there, the Wi-Fi works phenomenal there. We have Starlink Wi-Fi, so the Wi-Fi is very good on the island, and especially in and around the main lodge. So if there's a football game on or a hockey game on, you're welcome to go in the lodge, or you just want to watch the news. There's a big screen TV in there, and you can kind of hang out there, and FaceTime the wife, and that kind of thing. So, yeah, and our staff, like Paul is, I should talk about Paul and Sid. Paul is my son, and Sid is his girlfriend, and they're basically married. All he's ever wanted to do since we bought the camp is he's kind of outdoorsy like me, except he had the opportunity that I didn't, and he's really run with it. And he runs the place in the wintertime, and I kind of keep the home fires burning and do trade shows in the U.S., so him and Sid run the camp, and they do a phenomenal job. So, and we have a couple employees there too. We'll rotate through them, and we're just there to serve. So if you guys need something, we'll do it for you. So we clean fish. We charge for that, but you're welcome to clean your own as well. We'll take care of you for sure.
Yeah. Shout out to, your son and his girlfriend. Like that's who we hung out with when we were there. And they were awesome.
Right.
Like, you could just tell that they just, like, work really, really hard, have a passion for it for sure. And a passion for the fishing, you know, like passion for both. It is very, you know, just seemed like a very balanced approach. You know, we should talk about, you know, and I don't even have the questions sort of articulated for this, but I bet you get the questions when you have customers, first time customers, you know, what are sort of the bullet points? Some we've already touched on, probably, you know, bring your own bedding or whatever, but as far as like preparing somebody mentally and sort of setting up an appropriate expectation as far as, you know, how to be prepared to capitalize on the opportunities here for like an ice fishing trip, what are some of those bullet points, like conversations that you probably have regularly when you're at sport shows or whatever, like what are the questions that I'm not thinking of that you hear all the time? Like, we should address some of that stuff.
Right. And you know what? We didn't even talk about our hard shack. So we kind of have two types of ice fishermen that come to our camp. We got the kind that, they typically just want to rent a hard house that's on fish and hang out there for the day and maybe fish outside a little bit. And then we get the other guys that have their own gear with their own GPSs, their own snowmobile, for example, and they're ready to explore and fish on their own and hole hop and that kind of thing. So if we talk about our shacks a little bit, they're Aluma lights and we have 4 8x12s that are great for 3 to 4 people. And we just got a new, 8x16. That's good for probably 4 to 5 people. The kids have a couple on crappies right now and the rest are on walleyes. So those are the hard houses. Everybody is different. Everybody wants a different experience. Those nasty days where maybe the wind is blowing and it's like a minus 30 day, or minus 40 day, you know, we rent a lot of hard houses those days. They're like, well, we'll just take a hard house today. But I mean, for the guys that have a pop-up or a flip over shack and a snowmobile, It's phenomenal. Now we're not the kind of, we don't have roads plowed. We don't have ice castles, none of that. So you kind of, for the most part, you need a tracked vehicle. Every once in a while, you can get away with tires, like maybe early ice and maybe late ice. But for the most part, you need a snowmobile or you need a quad on tracks or side-by-side on tracks. And we do have snowmobiles that we rent out as well. They're all two-ups. And so you can do two-person on a snowmobile. And the snowmobiles are like 125 a day, I think, maybe 130 a day. And then with a hard house, they're half price. And the hard houses are, I think, 225 a day. So yeah. And then, but for the guys that want to explore, I mean, we have guys that come up and they go, oh, we've never fished this structure before. There's four of us. We're going to go drill some holes and fish this. And if we don't have luck there, we'll give it an hour and we'll go fish this point over here. And it's endless. It truly is endless. I remember listening to your podcast just the other day, and there was a guy that was really, I can't remember his name now, but he was like, he was so enthused about fishing a different lake every day, or fishing lakes he'd never done before. Well, you could do that with us, but on the same lake, just fish a spot you've never fished before. That's maybe 10 miles from another spot, you know, or 5 miles from another spot. And so it's really, really cool. I mean, the big difference between us and like the south side of the lake is, I mean, the U.S. on Lake of the Woods, they got like six islands, you know, and Canada got the other 14,000. So, so there's like so much structure by us, you know, islands you can hide behind the wind or just reefs or points off of islands and saddles, locations. It's just really endless to what you could fish, I guess.
Yeah, you're in a proximity that people could come up multiple times a year. You know, I mean, you're not so far away that people couldn't come up for early ice.
And lots of our customers do.
Yeah, like it's, yeah. I just feel like it's a really, really cool deal. It's type of place that gets in your bones. You do it maybe with the idea that it's a one-off thing that you're going to save up your time from work and you know, your dollars to go on a trip like this. But you go up there, maybe the first time you go up and you know, you kind of take advantage of all the offerings, you know, you rent the hard-sided shack, you rent the sleds or whatever, but you get a chance to see it and you realize, oh man, this would be so fun to do or try some of this on my own or do some of, you know, something more adventurous. So the next time you go up, you gather your buddies that are a little bit more hardcore, and then you go and you do it yourself, and it's just a blast, and it offers different, you know, it can be different things to different people for sure. But yeah, absolutely. The ice season. One thing I did want to get into before we get to the end, and there's, I feel like, Todd, I feel like we had a good enough time up there. And these are the kind of opportunities that I love highlighting on this podcast. So this won't be the last time we talk, but I do want to talk about the ice season. You know, sort of how long the ice season usually lasts. Like here we are now, kind of the end of February, early March. I want to talk a little bit about, even if we kind of talk about, like, say, the regulations of, like, you know, keeping fish and you know, what the opportunities are up there and how long it usually lasts.
Right. Okay. So we let's talk about the season first. So we open about January 4th, 5th, something like that, for our winter season. Now, we could start earlier lots of years. Like, it could probably start mid-December. But what we find is, you know, we have a hard time going to a wedding, a family wedding or a funeral or a graduation. It's you know, we're on all the time, 24/7 in the summertime. And if we don't, we at least say when we open for ice fishing, we're going to at least have Christmas and then have New Year's. And then we're going to open up. And then, you know, we don't have to worry about fighting, you know, like ice conditions and all. Because by the time we get there, you know, like even last year when it was a really, really kind of crappy winter season, really. When we got out there was 10 inches of ice, you know, and we didn't have to fight, you know, kind of bad ice conditions. It was already good when we got there. So we start kind of then, like early January, and we'll go to, you know, I think our last customers leave around March, typically March 25th-ish, and then we kind of try to get out of there by like March 31st. I think 90% of the time we have good ice at least till March 21st, and then probably 50% of the time till March 31st. But we still have to get out of there too, and we have to get all our stuff out. So, you know, that's a process. So we typically, I think our last customers usually leave about the 25th or 24th or 26th or something like that. So, and then we're usually out of there, you know, March 31st, April 1st, April 2nd kind of thing. The walleye season is open to April 15th. So that's our season. And then I guess I'll just, while we're talking seasons, we'll start talking about our summer season. So our walleye opener is the third Saturday in May, which is the weekend before your Memorial Day weekend. And then we'll usually touch November. You know, sometimes you've been there till November 10th, 15th. Some years it's like November 1st. So just depends on how bookings are looking and what the weather is doing, I guess. But we often stay about the latest out there. So that's our seasons. Now our fishing regulations. So they changed their walleye regs last January. So now you can keep the walleyes have to be under 16.9 inches to keep. And you can keep one over 27.5, and you can keep a two per day, and your possession is four. So you can bring four walleyes home and basically nothing over 16.9 from the letter of the law. And then you're allowed to bring home 15 perch per person and 10 crappies. That's with the sport license. But the conservation license is roughly half that. And then four pike and four bass as well. So I can just review. I was kind of all over the place there, but I'll review it. So you can bring home four walleyes, 15 perch, 10 crappies, four northerns, four smallmouth bass. And, of course, you can have fish each day, and then but your daily is your daily. You know what I mean? So
yep.
If you eat two walleyes, you're basically done fishing walleyes for that day. So yeah. And the crappies too, you can catch, you know, you can catch 10 crappies, eat them, and the next day you can go out and catch 10 more. So yeah, we have customers eat fish every day and then still go home with their limits basically. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's always a motivator, you know, it's like, doing a fish fry. It's like never bring so many groceries that, you know, that you're not motivated when you're fishing out there. That's always a great motivator, being a little bit hungry or be, you know, working hard for that fish fry, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. You know,
we have customers, especially in the summertime, that they eat fish like every day, if not like lunch and supper every day. And they often don't even bother bringing fish home. They're just like, no, we do come here for the fresh fish fries. And we love that. And they all have fish every day. And yeah, even on a slow day, late day out by us, like you don't get skunked. You always catch a few fish. So yeah, it's a great place to be able to do that for sure.
Yeah, that was how we did. Like we very rarely, when we go to destinations and film, you know, like we rarely, just for the hustle and bustle of it, like cleaning fish, you know, it's easier to just film and set yourself up so you can catch and release and be ethical that way. And, you know, that's kind of how a lot of, like anybody that watches our show, the television content or the video content, like, you know, it's just a lot of catch and release. We get questions all the time, like, why don't you keep fish? Well, we just rarely, unless it's like an appropriate scenario, but when we went up there, you know, we were catching crappies in that particular episode. We caught some walleyes too. You know, it, just being in that place, being out on the island and having the whole adventure, we're like, we got to soak this in. It just, nobody batted an eye. Like we were going to catch and keep and clean and have the same experience. We weren't going to bring them home or anything. It was so fun to go up there and catch fish, have a great experience and clean them and fry them. And it just like, man, it just felt so fun and rewarding. And, yeah, like, you know, if you want to bring fish home, it's a phenomenal place and, you know, to do that. Like it's so, that's easy too. But it was perfect like that. So I relate a lot to your customers that are like that, where we went up, just had a ball, took the time to, you know, keep fish for the fish fry. We cleaned them, we ate them. It was so worth it. And I was really, you know, yeah, like your guys' fish cleaning operation there too was like super fun. It was like so much camaraderie happened there. Like we're in cabins and it's cold out in the winter. So yeah. It's not like we spent a lot of time kind of, you know, you know, with the other people that were there fishing, you know, it's like you don't necessarily see them when it's cold out and you're just kind of spending your time in your cabin. And then you, in the morning, you go get out and you go fishing. You don't see anybody all day. It was fun at the cleaning shack because that's where we got to see people and everybody was just laughing and having a great time. And everybody's got buckets of nice fish. And it was, so that was, you know, we were glad afterwards. It's like, man, you know, if we hadn't done that, we wouldn't have, you know, met all these other cool people and heard all these great fishing stories. And it was fun. And I just wanted to throw that out there. That was a fun part of our experience, you know. That's if we'd have just done like catch and release, gosh, we went to, you know. So yeah, it's kind of that camaraderie was totally in full force there when everybody was laughing, cleaning fish. So yeah, man, that was a lot of fun. Well, awesome.
I could talk about our fish cleaning house in the wintertime too.
Yeah,
it's kind of, you know, it's kind of primitive, actually. We have this huge clam shack. It's basically like a double pop-up, and we have a couple of tables in there and some pails and some lights and a couple of Big Buddy heaters. And it's kind of a cool place to go clean fish. And in the summertime, we have a different fish house that we use, and I think we're building one this summer that we can do summer and winter in. But it's kind of a cool, you know, it works. It works, and it works well. The kids clean it every day, so it's in great shape. But it's kind of a neat kind of place to clean fish at the end of the day with. And that's kind of, like you said, that's when you maybe have that camaraderie with the others, you know, that are in camp at the time, you know, in the fish cleaning house, cleaning fish.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Good conversations are had there, too. And then, you know, sharing information. It's a destination where, you know, it's not a place where, you know, like as anglers, so often, you know, you don't want to reveal your secrets or you don't want people to know you're getting them a certain place as people move in on you. It's not even like that up there. Up there, everybody's on them, you know, in their own, like everybody's got their own spots and stuff. It's like you share good information. It's right. Fun. Everybody wants everyone to do good and everybody wants everyone to have a good time. And, you know, it's like, like it was just, totally good stuff happening there.
It's not like one specific spot. It's like, you know what, we did really good today in like 17 feet of water off point. And so you just go try, you know, the 3,000 spots you can think of that are 17 feet water off of a point.
Yeah.
So it's more general kind of fishing tips and everybody can kind of, you know, don't tell me exactly where you caught them, but like what's working for you kind of thing. So it's pretty cool. So,
yeah,
it's cool.
Well, what are, you know, for, as far as the fishing opportunities there and what you guys offer and what you guys have built there, you know, is there anything that we're missing for this conversation? I mean, we're doing so good on time here as the seasons go by, I'll be reaching out to you again because we're going to have to dig into some of the, you know, the specific fishing and the patterns and things that are really, really happening up there. But as far as, you know, this episode, I just really wanted to get in touch with you after we had a great experience there last year and just everything, you know, just sort of highlighting the opportunities up there, what I wanted to do and get to know you. What are we missing as far as that goes right here, right now?
Oh, gosh, I'm such a scatterbrain. We're probably missing all kinds of stuff. But you can find so much information on our website. You know, we touched about the videos earlier from Tyler and Sarah from Sportsman's Journal. Of course, Jason Mitchell was up there as well. And we have a bunch of amateur videos and other people that have stayed there at camp, like Aaron Weeb's been there and Camel Gratis, which is the biggest YouTube channel in Europe, has been there. But anyway, if you want to go to our website, you know, you can find a lot of information there as well as a bunch of videos and some articles and that kind of stuff. So I invite you to go check that out at www.tamarackanalytislodge.com. And if you have any questions, you can call me and email me. We're kind of an open book, so just let us know what you think and hopefully we can help you out. So yeah man,
no, that's perfect. I think that's a great sort of a closer there. And all the links will be in the description of the podcast for sure, for people to find you and get a hold of you and ask questions and start thinking about this, thinking about this place. Because, yeah, I think that, you know, for people that are adventurous, you know, there's just a lot of reasons to be thinking about, you know, this fishing opportunity, no matter where you're from or whatever experience level you are, you guys just offer so much. And it's just, it's not, it doesn't have that commitment of travel that is, you know, a full day's travel to get there. I mean, I guess that depends on where you're from, but I mean, speaking to people in the Midwest,
sure.
There's so many people that I believe, and we said this when we filmed up there, people watched the episode, like we just felt this way, like, you know, for so many people that, you know, again, using just sort of a reference point of like downtown Minneapolis in Minnesota, like you could leave your house if you're packed up the night before and your crew gets together, you know, at an early breakfast time and you left at 6 o'clock in the morning, you'd be there in time to get moved into your cabin and go get the evening bite. Like it's
absolutely,
it's, I mean,
yes,
you'd
get a
be
couple
there.
Hours fishing in,
yeah. You can be there and fishing day one. You know, it's not a full day's travel. And then, you know, getting home too, people fail to always remember this. I'm guilty of it, is like, I can plan a great fishing trip and how to get there and how to have fun while I'm there. But it's like that last day when you're packing up to get home, you know, and, you know, it's, you know, if you've got a 12-hour drive or a 14-hour drive home, sometimes that can be fatiguing. And you got that sort of in your mind when you get home after a trip and it's like, oh man, I want to schedule my next fishing adventure, but maybe let's find a place that isn't quite so far away. If that's what somebody's thought process is, this is one of those opportunities that for so many people, you know, it just checks so many boxes. If you're looking for that adventurous, fun, like Canadian fishing experience, you know, but just don't necessarily have that logistical commitment of like a super, super far away drive. Again, that's relative. Like there's plenty of people that hear this that are far from there, but you know, but definitely, I don't know. I just feel like that's such a fun thing about where you're at and you're, you know, in your circle, yeah. You know, early
you know
in the conversation.
I guess the other thing we could mention too is we use Baudette a lot. So, say like we have a lot of people that stay the night in Baudette and they come the next morning and they get a full day that day. So we keep the Baudette motels pretty busy, you know, on the night of arrival, and even departure, but mostly arrival for our customers. Cause they can leave Minneapolis maybe after work on a Friday, you know, and they can stay in Baudette that night. And the next morning they could be at our island at like 9 or 10 in the morning. And the whole day to fish.
There you go.
So we both, we could work both ways, right? So
yeah.
So works out fantastic. So
yeah, you could on your last day being there, you could fish. You can fish till noon, 1 o'clock, and still make it home, you know, in time for supper and the game. You know, it's like it's just
sure.
So anyways, great opportunity, man. Well, I'm glad we were able to touch base, Todd, and do this time of year, because I think it, you know, we're kind of. Yeah, we're like right in the heart of your season, you know, January, February, March. We still got, you know, all of March left. It, you know, you're going to have great ice up there. And it's, you know, just a fun opportunity to be talking about. And if people are all wrapped up for the ice season, and you're thinking about a place to go open water with the same kind of adventure, I'm just glad we were able to kind of touch on some of your open water offerings as well at the same time. And whatnot. So yeah, man. All that is to say, you kind of already mentioned the website and whatnot, but we'll wrap this up like I always do. Let people know where to find you and how to maybe get a hold of you with any questions or just to look you up a little bit. Just say those one more time.
Sure. Okay. Our website is www.tamarackislandwildernesslodge.com. My phone number is 204-792-2097. And then my email address is tamaracklodge@lotw@gmail.com.